To call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order here. I have actually seen enough members that we do have a quorum already. If you could just sort of give some accommodation here, because I know people are still coming in. Rules Committee ran late, so things are still being set up. So I apologize for that. I do want to make sure we have enough time for today's agenda, however. And before we get started, I would like to offer a debt of thank you to our wonderful committee administrator, Amanda Rudolph, who brought donuts today from Duck Donuts, which, for those who don't know, Amanda is a devoted keeper of an unusual pet. She has several pet ducks. She lost her pet duck, Gizmo, yesterday, so I know losing a pet is an extremely sad occurrence, I was kind of insistent. I offered to reimburse her. She refused because I don't think staff should generally be in the habit of feeding members, but she is a very generous person and wanted to do this as a way to honor the memory of Gizmo. So thank you, Amanda. That was a very kind move. So, and I will hand these out. Send them down. I do want to draw your attention. There's a memo in your packets. House File 839 was referred to the Elections Committee. So I wanted to mention that. There's napkins coming. Yeah, save one for me, please. The first order of business. Representative Erickson is here. House File 570 is on the agenda. Welcome to the committee, Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair?
I will move that House File 570 be re-referred to the General Register. If you could please present your bill, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. House File 570 authorizes Mille Lacs County to make the auditor-treasurer position an appointed position subject to reverse referenda. And here with me is Mille Lacs County's administrator, Pat Ullman, and I think he can give you the reasons why we think this is good for Mille Lacs County at this time.
Yes, welcome to the committee. If you could please just state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Ullman. I'm the county administrator, Mille Lacs County.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ullman.
Thank you, sir.
Please present your testimony.
Yes, sir. And thank you, members of the House, for considering this bill. And thank you, Representative Erickson, for submitting the bill. This has been brought to you after a long discussion with our county board over the last 2 years. It's always been a part of our legislative platform. We have a distinction of having a very long-term county auditor treasurer who's been an employee for us for 40 years, has been an auditor treasurer for 26, very valuable member of the team with regards to finances. And over a review with our legislative platform over the last few years, with the cooperation of the county auditor and unanimous support of our board, we're bringing this to your attention. We've had a lot of public input for it. We put it in our newsletter that goes out to every household. So our county citizens are very much aware that this is a real important piece of our platform. And really the value of this is not new legislation for the House. You have seen this type of legislation with other counties. In our own Bean County, we have about 35 counties that have proceeded down this path. I think the value for us is as we move down to looking at finances for the county and elections, losing that experience is difficult to replace in a regular election. And so having an appointed auditor allows us to provide the right individual with that experience and that expertise to help function in the capacity of elections and finances and payroll under our administrative form of government. This has certainly been a top priority for the Minnesota Rural County Caucus, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and also with MACO as well. And I guess I'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair, and answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Maybe before member questions, is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, yes. Welcome to the committee. Feel free to pull up that chair at the end there. And then if you could just state your name, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Troy Olson, and I represent the Minnesota Association of County Officers. So the Minnesota Association of County Auditors and the Association of Minnesota Counties have come to agreement on language and for this type of thing, but we would prefer to see a statewide bill rather than individual counties. So we would, with the same type of language, but include auditors, treasurers, auditor treasurers, and recorders all in one bill for statewide. So.
Thank you. I knew that bill was forthcoming, this bill was referred to our committee, so I thought it appropriate to move it forward since we have done that for these sorts of bills in the past.
And if I could just respond, we feel the same way. We would like to have a state legislative solution, but the successes for the counties that have been able to get an appointed county auditor has been with an individual bill such as this, and we've given a lot of thought to this as a county, and with the unanimous support from our county board, we'd like the bill to be considered.
Sure. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on the bill? Okay. Why don't you both stay up there just in case there are any member questions for any of you. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Olson, for teeing me up, because I do have that bill, and it's been already filed to allow statewide. And as we all know that have been or any length of time, that every year we get one or two, I think up to five, a year that of counties, different ones coming forward asking for this authority. And we always seem to pass these with very little objection. I think there's been a couple of representatives that have objected over the years to removing people's ability to vote on these positions. But every year we seem to approve every bill that comes before us. And yet when we've tried to do the amendment, either by an amendment or whatever, that to do these statewide or do a bill, we don't get much support. I think the last year we were up to over 50% of the counties have the authority to do either one or both positions. And I don't know, I think we have to get to 86 counties before they'll let us do a statewide bill. But Representative Erickson, I support your bill wholly, and I might have an amendment when it comes to the floor or in a later committee to do it statewide. And hopefully you accept that as friendly.
Absolutely.
Okay. And he sounded more like a comment. I'm seeing some nodding. Representative Sauk, ahead on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point exactly was where I was going to start asking, but it was 10 minutes ago. The question, though, that comes up is, my sense would be that there is a significant amount of benefit for a county organization to discuss the ramifications of moving into this decision that would not be afforded to them if we just did a sweeping state mandate or a state collected change and that sort of thing. So I was just curious if you'd reflect on the benefit of the fact that you had to process it in order to get to this point.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Sauk, I think that Deb Dyson could shed some light on this, the history of this, and whether or not the bill that would come forth to allow all counties to do this has the same language in it. And I know that you've been responsible for making sure that the language is specific enough, but I would hope that that includes the opportunity for all citizens of a county to weigh in on it. But maybe you could shed some light on it.
Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sauk, the special laws are reverse referendums, so there is if there's general agreement, it's unlikely there'd be a petition filed. In some counties, there have been petitions filed because there wasn't general agreement. So clearly, there's that discussion. The proposal that has been out there in the past for changing general statute for this is to create a reverse referendum process similar to the special laws that have been proposed. So it would be the same situation. Currently, general law requires the referendum no matter what. And so the special laws are just taking it back one step and allowing it to be a reverse referendum. And that has been at least six different times, six different sessions, there have been bills to put into general law the reverse referendum process.
Representative Saw? Okay. Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that that's, my bill has that in it where they have the ability to do this, and they have the ability, if they decide to go back, there's a process for going reverting back. So that's, we've taken care of that in the general law that I have, or bill that I have for the general, for all the counties.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Yes, could you please identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all 87 counties. And I think, to Representative Sock's point, that's a very good point. And what we've seen over the history of this, and I think there are now over 34 counties that have authority to appoint one or more of their row officers, and more than half the counties to either appoint or combine one of those offices through special legislation. But what we've seen is that, first of all, these public discussions tend to take place even before they're voting on the resolution. And then in here, there is a posting requirement that is posted in the newspapers, and there is an opportunity for the public to weigh in. Typically, what we've seen is if the public weighs in during that process, county commissioners are very cognizant of that and aren't willing to risk their elections on voting for a controversial bill. But that being said, council did identify the fact that there is a reverse referendum clause in here for that second layer of public protection to make sure that, hey, maybe there wasn't a public meeting where folks attended, but there is this stopgap that says, hey, after the fact, we aren't comfortable with this, and we can do this reverse referendum. And it has been successful. In Lake County, a reverse referendum happened, and so they are back to an elected auditor. And for us, that's just a sign that these are well-drafted and that they are working.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. Any additional member questions? Okay. Representative Erickson, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope you'll support House File 570. What I appreciate is the specificity that over the years has become a part of this legislation to move auditor treasurers to appointment from election. If you notice Subdivision 3, the incumbent must complete the term. And in Subdivision 4, there's this publication and petition and resolution. The public is really engaged in this, as Mr. Hilgart pointed out. So with that said, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I'll renew my motion that House File 570 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Your bill is on its way, Representative Erickson. Thank you. I neglected to ask for approval of the minutes of the February 7th meeting. Draft version was inadvertently circulated. There are two corrections on it. On page 2, there's a testifier identified as Sorensen. That should say Kathy Sorensen. And then Irene Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities. The last name is spelled K-A-O. So with those corrections, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Representative Elkins moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Okay, the next item on the agenda is House File 400. Representative Olson, if you could please come forward. While Representative Olson is coming forward, I just want to mention this is a bill that touches on a lot of different areas. It's already been heard in two committees. Those provisions have been, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Baker is here to present the bill as well. Thank you for being here. Some of the provisions have already been discussed in other committees. There are two provisions in House File 400 that are germane to the Government Operations Committee. It's Article 1, Section 3, and Section 7 that relates to the Opioid Stewardship Advisory Council. As I'm sure you remember from our first hearing, advisory councils are a mandatory referral under House Rule 4.13. And then in Article 3, Section 1 of the bill, this requires the commissioner to adopt rules. So rulemaking is also within the jurisdiction of the Government Operations Committee. I will possibly allow some latitude, but just given the breadth of this bill, I'd like to try to keep both the testimony and the member questions more focused to the issues that are specifically within the jurisdiction of the Government Operations Committee. Representative Zerwas, you have a comment to that?
Well, and Mr. Chair, I thank you for laying out the areas of oversight of the committee. I think, however, looking at the Government Operations Committee, and one of the other roles that we do is we have oversight of operations of the Board of Pharmacy. I think we would agree with that. And there are significant portions throughout this bill that directs the Board of Pharmacy to begin to do new things. And so I think that would greatly expand the areas in which we should make sure to have oversight of this bill. For example, Article 1, Section 6 directs the Board of Pharmacy to determine how much each pharmacy needs to pay, how much pharmaceutical manufacturer needs to pay in order to assess $12 million. That would be a new duty for the Board of Pharmacy to carry out if we're directing the board that we have operational oversight over to do new operations. We should certainly discuss that at this hearing, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. The general rule is that if a bill makes a substantial change to a board, then it is within the jurisdiction of Government Operations. So I'll maybe allow some leeway related to the Board of Pharmacy.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I know substantial is a kind of eye of the beholder type term.
Mr. Chair, I know Dr. Weiberg in earlier committees has commented that he's already talking with administration staff about getting new space because of the anticipated FTEs he's going to need to hire to implement this. The language in this bill would require the Board of Pharmacy to implement a new taxing and licensing system. Clearly, this is a huge expansion of the day-to-day operation of the Board of Pharmacy, which right now license pharmacists and regulates their operations, and license pharmacies and regulates their operations. When we're talking about millions of dollars in new revenue, an entirely new revenue system being established, within here, not only does the Board of Pharmacy set up a new way to collect $12 million, it then sends up an appeals process where if you disagree with the Board of Pharmacy's approach to how much your company needs to allocate, you can appeal that in this bill to the Board of Pharmacy. And so they have the licensing component, the collection component, and magically within this bill, they have the appeals component, Mr. Chair. And so clearly, this giant expansion of the roles and responsibility of the Board of Pharmacy is a purview of the Government Operations Committee, which has direct oversight of the Board of Pharmacy.
Okay, thank you for that comment, Representative Zerwas. We'll see how the hearing goes. So I will move that House File 400 be recommended for passage and re-referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there is an author's amendment
as
well.
Sure. I will move the author's amendment. Representative Olson, would you like to explain the amendment? Sure. Why don't you do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is an amendment here. It does a name change to the Stewardship Advisory Council, and it changes some language around, doesn't add or delete anybody from the Advisory Council, but just makes a distinction in there, as well as administering. It adds one more, not specifically pertinent to this, but we are going to, for the administration of Narcan, Naloxone, that we are going to add somebody else to that list at a different point in the bill. So it's an author's amendment, some changes that I will also discuss as I present the bill, too. So I'd ask for your support of the amendment.
Okay, thank you. All right, all those in favor of the amendment to put the bill in the shape Representative Olson would like, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. The bill is in the shape you'd like, Representative Olson. If you could please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. While we are in the middle of an opioid crisis, parents have lost children, teachers have lost students, our first responders are asked to respond to impossible situations. No other family deserves to go through this, and Minnesotans expect us to take action, enacting comprehensive treatment, prevention, and recovery strategies to end this crisis. While families, communities, and the state as a whole have paid a significant price during this crisis, both in dollars and in the tragic loss of life. House File 400 brings more of the actors in this crisis to invest in efforts around prevention, education, treatment, and recovery initiatives. House File 400 builds off the great bipartisan, bicameral work that was done last session, but sadly did not move forward. Many of these provisions are not new into this bill, but are built from what was brought forward last session. This bill, as you've heard the chair mention, has had several stops already and will continue to move. House File 400 requires a license and registration of opioid manufacturers and wholesale distributors of opioids. These revenues, in addition to any funds received by the state from the settlement of legal proceedings against the opioid manufacturers, are deposited into a stewardship account. And money is appropriated from this fund to efforts aimed at education, prevention, and treatment. And as mentioned, this bill has had several stops where we've discussed a lot of components of the bill and will continue to discuss in relevant committees. Pertinent to this committee specifically are Articles 1, Sections 3 and 7, with the formation of an advisory council of stakeholders who will make recommendations on grant and funding options for annually appropriated to the DHS commissioner from the stewardship account. The advisory council will convene on a quarterly basis and for other meetings as necessary. Also pertinent to this committee is Article 3, Section 1, which is the voluntary non-opioid directive. This section requires the Commissioner of Health to adopt rules establishing requirements related to the use of voluntary non-opioid health care directives. And with that, I will turn it over to Representative Baker.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Baker. Thank you for being here.
And Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I'll keep my comments very brief. There's been a number of legislators on both sides of the aisle working on this process. This is sort of cutting-edge stuff here. And no one else in the country has gotten a bill like this with the innovation and the kind of out-of-the-box thinking to try to bring something to the table that brings us some new revenue to help folks really struggling with addiction. The opioid crisis is real. It happens, and it's happening every day. People are getting addicted to this stuff because they really don't know what the heck it is. You know, if you're a new legislator here, you probably can barely know how to spell the word opioid. It took me a while to understand what that was spelt like, but also, what is it? Well, it's pharmaceutical heroin. It's very important for this to be in our medicine world. One thing that Representative Olson and I have always said, we do not want to slow down the access, take it away from anybody. We want to make sure people who need this get this important medicine to have a life. What this bill does not do is not a penalty. This is not to penalize folks that are getting this to us. But what this does is it recognizes this important and strong, powerful medicine that when not used appropriately, like other substance abuses that we have out in our world that is legal, it can get out of hand, and we need to have some other support to try to help folks in recovery and in staying alive and getting naloxone out there. Again, I own a bar restaurant. I pay a lot of money for my license fee to serve liquor. Some people use it badly, and it becomes a problem. So it's just, and those funds go towards law enforcement and training and all those kind of things. We are in a weird place now. Our medicine and our medical community was brought some medicine, I think, that they were poorly advised at how to prescribe it. And I think it is a legislative move to try to help them because they're not recovering and reacting fast enough, in my opinion. Now, I will say that many hospitals, many doctors have recognized what's happening, and they are doing a much better job today than they have been doing over the last 20 years. So let's make sure we celebrate some of those steps. But we also know that there's been a large component of we need more funds to do more things with medically assisted treatments, to recognize what's happening in our local counties with out-of-child placement and the cost that it's putting burdens on our counties. So we think that this $20 million ask, and with the help of this advisory council, specific and laser-focused to put the money where we think it should be, we will advise the commissioner of DHS, as Representative Olson has stated, to have this very focused on where we can do the best and get our best bargain for that money. $20 million, folks, isn't even 10% of what we're putting into the state every year now into chemical abuse. So this is just a small extra that we need to do. I like this because it's ongoing every year. We don't have to come back and keep fighting for this. This is a nice way to get some revenue on an issue that we think and I think got out of hand. So I guess with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions as well and just kind of play a as a support to Representative Olson.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Olson, Representative Baker. Representative Olson, did you have specifically anybody you wanted to testify on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just given the number of stops and the specificity of why we're here, we don't have specific testifiers for those provisions.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Olson. I do have two people who've signed up to testify here, and I'll see if there's anybody else as well. So it's Aaron Schindler from the Minnesota Acupuncture Association and Dr. Chuck Sawyer. Was that you were shaking? Okay. Okay, now is there anyone in the audience who would like to come, who would like to speak to this bill? And again, the areas that are germane to this committee in particular are relate to the advisory council and the rulemaking procedures. To you know, to an extent, we could talk about the Board of Pharmacy stuff that Representative Zerwas identified also. So if there is anyone who wants to testify, to the extent you could keep your testimony to those, that would be appreciated. I'm not seeing anybody coming forward on this, so which is somewhat surprising. Okay, well, there's I guess there's no testimony, so we'll go to member discussion about this. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see Dr. Weiberg from the Board of Pharmacy is in the audience. I'm wondering if he can come down and help the committee learn about some of the new roles and responsibilities of the Board of Pharmacy if this language were to move forward.
Sure. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Weiberg. Appreciate you being here. Yeah, to the extent you could keep your remarks to the jurisdiction of this committee, I'd appreciate it. But please, do you have enough to go forward from what Representative Zerwas requested?
Mr.
If you
Chair,
could, and you should probably identify yourself for the record first.
Mr. Chair, first, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy. I didn't have any prepared testimony, but I'm certainly willing to answer any questions that Representative Zerwas or any of the members might have.
Okay. Representative Zerwas, did you have a specific question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Dr. Weiberg. The bill itself calls on the Board of Pharmacy to do many new things that you haven't yet done. Specifically, in the bill language, it sets an aggregate amount at $12 million and basically asks the Board of Pharmacy to work backwards and assess manufacturers to get to that $12 million. If you could walk the committee through that new process and the new operations that the Board of Pharmacy would be engaging in doing that process, I think that would be very helpful.
Yes, sir. Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas. So in some ways, there isn't as much new as you might think here. The Board of Pharmacy not only regulates the practice of pharmacy and licenses pharmacies, we also regulate the manufacture and distribution of drugs, and so we actually do already license manufacturers and wholesalers. So the way that the current version of the bill is structured as opposed to what had happened last year where there was sort of a penny a pill fee, if you will, this is just a registration fee that we do know how to do. It is, you are right, it's set differently. Most of our licensing and registration fees are actually set by the legislature, a specific amount. And in fact, we have to ask for a general fee increase this year. This is a much larger fee in some cases, obviously. And so there is certainly a difference of scope. In terms of the IT needs that we'll have to meet, we have to do two things. We have to work with our licensing vendor we already have to modify the manufacturing and wholesale licensing subsystems, if you will, to add a second fee. That's a fairly simple thing to do. We're going to work with our PMP vendor actually to collect the data from the manufacturers and wholesalers, and actually even from some pharmacies that have their own wholesale operations. That's going to be reported to us in a format that's referred to as ARCOS data. this is something the wholesalers at least already have to report to the DEA. And we've already talked to our TMP vendor about building the module that would collect that data and that would do the math to assign fees to each wholesaler and manufacturer. And then what we would do is, based on that, we would send out an invoice. You mentioned the ability to dispute the invoices. I've been with the board for a little over 13 years. Prior to that, from 1999 till I joined the board in 2005, I was the Department of Human Services Pharmacy Program Manager. And we collected, and I'm sure the department still does collect, Medicaid rebates. And Medicaid, this dispute process was modeled after the Medicaid rebate dispute process. So basically what happens is that in DHS, they do quarterly invoices for rebates, and the manufacturer can dispute that, and then the two sides do work out the dispute. So it was really modeled after that. So I think that kind of is a summary of what I think we need to do.
Representative Zerwas.
The language in the bill, Dr. Weiberg, talks about units and assessing on units. It's not defined anywhere in the legislation what a unit is or what a unit means. Can you kind of expand on that for the committee? What's a unit? How do we arrive at a unit? How do we quantify a unit? And then I think the other big question is, if a large-scale manufacturer says, you know what, Minnesota's not a fun place to do business anymore. We're not going to operate in Minnesota anymore. And kind of unbeknownst to the other players in the field, their product share, for the lack of a better term, increases. When would they be notified of that? Would they be notified when they get their invoice? Or when would they be notified that their units significantly changed from what was expected?
I think I remember this question coming up in HHS policy about units, but I'll allow this if you could keep your answer brief, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, units you can think of are what the patient takes. So a tablet, a capsule, a patch for fentanyl patches, a milliliter for an oral solution. It's the dosage unit that the patient would take. In terms of your second question, to the extent that a manufacturer did decide to not do business in the state, this is a yearly process, and so the other manufacturers would find out with the invoice the next year.
Okay. Representative Zerwas?
So with the unit process and the dosing process, do we have any other licensure frameworks? And maybe this is a better question for the nonpartisan staff. Do we have any other licensure frameworks that operate similar to this? Do we license chiropractors by how many procedures they do? Are there any doctors that we license per visit? It just, the volume aspect of this becomes, I think, really challenging for implementation and understanding. Is there any similar licensure scheme in the healthcare system that we operate in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Zerwas, healthcare licensing, I know, is a healthcare related question. So I don't know that our nonpartisan staff here would be able necessarily to answer that question. I'm seeing a shake of head. Do you have anything, Dr. Weiberg, that you can respond to quickly on that point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, I'm not aware of any other licensing like this. I can tell you, since I've been very much involved for the last couple of years in the process, why this process was chosen. It's to make sure that very small manufacturers and wholesalers don't pay the same fee as large multinational corporations do. That was the rationale behind this, to try to find some sort of a tiering. We have something a little bit related to this in that for wholesalers specifically, we do have different set fees depending on what they handle. So the companies that handle a wide variety of drugs, over-the-counter drugs, controlled substances, prescription drugs, they pay a slightly higher fee than a pharmacy that might only be selling two bottles of amoxicillin to the local dentist twice a year. We have that, but, you know, the scale is way different.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the authors or the doctor, you mentioned a couple of IT requirements, and that obviously tripped my trigger, Representative Olson. What are the interactions that you'll be having with first EPHI, Electronic Personal Health Information? Who is your vendor that's creating this software? Are they properly taking into consideration the cybersecurity requirements that are going to be there? I have great concerns with obviously anything that the state IT agency is going to be creating. Their track record has been pretty spotty as of late. So help me understand what this is going to accomplish, who's doing the work, and are they actually are they housing EPHI, or is this aggregated data that is just units? And help me understand all that before we go down this road, if you would, please.
Dr. Weiberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, there's no protected health information at all. The data that we're collecting is aggregate data. I do know that when pharma puts something out, they mention some sort of HIPAA implications. I can't understand what those are because, really, we're just getting data on the units shipped into the state. We're not getting claims-level data like we used to get when I was at Medicaid, so that's one. The two vendors are currently our vendor for our licensing is called HID, Health Information Designs. That's our old PMP vendor. GL Suites is our licensing vendor currently. We've worked with GL Suites since before I came to the board, and they have been vetted by Minute. Minute hasn't been involved directly in developing either one of these two programs, but we do have to run what these vendors want to do past them in terms of looking at cybersecurity. And so both of the vendors have had a Minute review in terms of data security. The second vendor is called APRIS. That's our PMP vendor. They do collect protected health information for us for the PMP. And again, we have had them as a vendor for several years. They actually serve 40-some states now. And again, we had all of their security features from the physical location where they stored the data to the encryption that they use has all been reviewed by Minute.
Representative Nash, follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to – the next stop is StakeFI. Is that correct?
Ways and Means,
okay. Yeah. I have financial implication questions of database creation and such, but I'll ask the author offline because that's outside the jurisdiction that we're dealing with today. But, you know, I guess my thoughts and suggestions to the authors are make sure that this is buttoned up tightly, because this is we've had a really bad track record with things as of late, and I don't believe that if you're going to go down this road, if this becomes law, that you want that as the failure point, because there have been immeasurable failure points as it relates to this sort of thing. Thanks. Okay.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson and Representative Baker, for bringing this forward. I know I've shared my story with you guys, but you know, this is really important. My family has gone through this. My brother got addicted to opioids after an appendectomy when he was 15. And went down the trail all the way to, you know, heroin. And my family has a happy story that, you know, we were able to get him help and treatment, and he has been sober now for almost 3 years, I believe, and is working in sober living houses. He runs sober living houses and is helping other people with their recovery as well now. You know, we still worry about him. He lives in L.A. now, so can't check up on them every day. But what I worry about is the families that don't have the support, don't have the financial means or the credit score to rack up debt to put to put people into treatment and recovery, and or those families that don't have the support system around them to offer them what they need. And so that is where I believe this comes in, and I just really want to thank you for your effort. I hope that more families have happy endings, and I think that's the goal of this legislation. So I just wanted to thank you guys.
I don't have any additional member questions. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank again Representative Olson and Representative Baker. We are reminded again of the program with the handout that I think Representative Kreisha brought down. And I really hope that does get to be a big part of what we do, because I do believe in working with so many different issues going on in our state. This morning we heard in the rural caucus about mental health and heard about peer respite. And I think a lot of these homes, probably what Representative Cagle was talking about, having a home like that is great. And so I hope we really look into programs like this, because I think that's where it is. It's a lot more one-on-one. I think it feels more caring. And so I hope that that is a large part of what happens. And I hope we can continue to fund it and fund it the way it needs to be done. This is such a huge epidemic, and it affects so many different people and lives and businesses. And I just really, since Representative Kreisha brought this down, really want to say again how much I hope that this is a large part of what happens.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Baker, you looked okay.
More of a closing statement.
Okay, sure. Okay. Representative Zerwas?
Yeah, I think just is. Thank you, Dr. White. I don't have a sorry about that. For Representative Olson, for both authors, is it your opinion, as I believe, that the history with opioids in the United States is of gross overuse and gross overprescription? Just wondering if you would agree with that, and if kind of moving forward, the goal is to see that diminish and go down. And is this legislation a step towards doing that by raising awareness? And
Representative Olson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Zerwas. I think we could spend a lot of time talking about the history and why we're here, and the intentional efforts that have kind of got us to this point, that it was constructed to, and here we are. This is a bill about moving forward, and it's about, we're not going through the whole bill, and I think you sit on finance and other committees where we'll likely get into it. But what I really appreciate about what we're doing here with the revenue we're bringing in is we're taking a really comprehensive approach around education, prevention, treatment, so not just funding after the addiction has happened, but really trying to stem the tide and looking at non-narcotic pain management and other practices. We put in some continuing education around non-pharmacological ways to handle pain for doctors and whatnot. So I think it is a really comprehensive approach, not just to say we're going to take, these revenues and put it towards treatment and recovery, but we're actually trying to go upstream with it as well and talk about prescribing and other things. We have some of that in the here as well. So I think to your point that, yes, there is that intention of looking to curb the what has been an overprescription of opioids.
Representative Zerwas?
And I guess just kind of last thoughts. My concern with putting in the language of the bill for a new function of the Board of Pharmacy, which is to raise $12 million to fund this ask, is that the per unit cost, if this works, and opioid use and misuse goes down, the per unit cost goes up, and it goes up and up and up. The more effective this is, the more expensive the fee is, because we're putting in law that no matter what, we got to get $12 million. And so we've set an end goal for how much money you want to spend, and then we're finding a way to work backwards to get that money. And so that's my concern, is as this is more effective, and say that as companies are being more responsible, as the amount of drugs goes down that's prescribed, the per unit cost actually goes up, because at the end of the day, you still want $12 million. And so, hey, that part of it, I think, is really challenging for me. And we create the opioid council in the bill, but they end up just being a recommendation body. They recommend stuff to the commissioner. The commissioner decides everything. This legislature, the way I read it, this legislature has no ability to, if the opioid council says, let's spend the $12 million on this, and the commissioner goes, nah, I'm going to spend it on that. This legislature has no ability to overrule that, as I understand the language. And so we're creating a council. We're spending $1 million of the $12 million to create a council. But then at the end of the day, they just recommend to the commissioner. And so I have real concerns about the way this is being carried out. We're telling the Board of Pharmacy, you have to raise $12 million through this unit fee. Even if units drop significantly, just redo your math and come up with the right per unit amount to still raise us $12 million. And we're going to have an advisory group come together that's going to make suggestions to the commissioner. But at the end of the day, the commissioner is going to do what the commissioner is going to do. And so I have concerns with those aspects of the bill. Representative Olson, I commend you for taking on this issue. It is probably the most challenging issue at the legislature last session and this session. Representative Baker, the commitment that you've had in working on this issue and your commitment to this issue, I think, cannot be questioned by any member of this legislature. I wholly hope that we're able to fund these programs and fund these services. I just have significant disagreement with the source of the revenue, because I think it is a disingenuous approach to recover those costs. But I wish you the best of luck in moving the bill forward at this point.
The revenue questions are a little bit more appropriate for the Ways and Means Committee, but if you'd like to respond quickly, Representative Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would just say to Representative Zerwas, if you look on Article 1, Section 7, lines 9.14 through 9.20, there is a report, or 9. through 9.23, there is a reporting function to the point that you're making about the prescriptions going down, with a report that comes back to the legislature, and we have a date on there of 2023. So we have put, if you read through the bill, there are many places in here where we're asking for evaluations and reports and to have more sets of eyes to continue to look at this. In a crisis that started in the 90s, and look where we are now, I would love to say in 2023 we come back and we can say we've solved it and we're figuring out the next thing. But this is a large crisis, and it's going to take a while. And so And rather than continuing to have our general fund dollars that we are paying, like I said in committee before, my county alone in out-of-home child placement costs is spending $26 million. Imagine if we continue and we fund this crisis out of the general fund until we fix it. What else aren't we going to fund with this money? So I'd love to see what you're willing not to spend money on so we can continue to fund this out of our general fund. But right now, because we have such a big crisis on our hand and we need more folks to contribute to the revenue to fight this crisis, and we do put some guidelines in here and evaluations and reports to go back to us and talk about how have we made a dent, and then I'd be very interested in evaluating where we go from here.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, you're not funding the fix for the whole crisis. You're funding $12 million with this approach. We have a $1.5 billion surplus. If $12 million was a priority, we would fund it.
Okay. Representative Olson?
Mr. Chair, it's $20 million in this bill, $12
million. Out of that fee concept.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Again, that's more of a Ways and Means type issue. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson and Representative Baker, just want to thank you for your work on this. And Representative Olson, I just wondered if you could, I'll defer to the chair if this is within the purview of the committee, but just wanted to ask if you could expand a little bit about the acupuncture element in this bill.
It is a little outside the scope of this committee. If you care to, if you're able to answer it quickly, Representative Olson, I guess I'll allow it here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. As we've talked, that this is a really holistic approach to going after the opioid crisis, that part of that is non-pharmacological pain management, and so that is a piece of what we have in this legislation to expand people's access to non-pharmacological pain management.
Okay. Representative Heinrich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Gomez?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the representatives for bringing this bill forward. I think like a lot of people in our state and across the country, this has impacted my life personally. I've, unfortunately have lost a number of people in my life to opioid overdose and have people who are very close to me who are currently struggling with this issue. I'm glad that Representative Zerwas pointed out that this is a challenging issue. This is one of the most challenging issues that we're facing. And to that kind of point, I want to welcome the pharmaceutical lobbyists who are joining us today in the GovOps committee. Welcome, thank you all for being here. Or I'm sorry that you're all here, because I just want to say, like, as a member of the public last year, and someone who has a personal stake in this issue, that it was incredibly disheartening and disappointing to hear about a bipartisan approach that had been agreed to, what we call like the penny a pill approach, and then hearing about the dozens to, I don't know, I heard hundreds of pharmaceutical lobbyists who were flown in to Minnesota to lobby against that bipartisan compromise that was rooted in I thought a good faith effort to really like approach this issue with the urgency that it requires. And so to me, it's like thinking about saying that it's inappropriate to levy, fees against manufacturers and distributors, and that we should instead take this out of the general fund, which is what, based on hearing testimony in other committees and maybe some of what we've heard today, that I think that's like the approach that's being advocated by some people here. Purdue Pharma has made billions of dollars off of this crisis. Their executives admitted criminal negligence in misrepresenting that they misled regulators, doctors, patients about the risk of addiction associated with OxyContin. This isn't obviously just about Purdue Pharma, but I guess it feels weird to be having this conversation about a funding source for dealing with this crisis that the public is paying for, right? Let's be very clear, to Representative Olson's point. We're paying for it in emergency room visits. We're paying for it in out-of-home placement for our kids, right? We're paying for it in just this devastating human cost in so many of our communities. So I guess I just wanted to express my frustration about some of the conversations that are happening around the funding source, and it feels very much like all those folks representing the pharmaceutical industry that were here last year and who are here today with us are influencing this discussion in a way. And, we can all go and look at what happened in terms of, like, campaign contributions after the session ended.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Chair. Okay. Here's the deal, Mr. Chair.
You have
run a professional, respectful committee. I admire your ability to do such a thing, but this, Mr. Chair, is out of line. I think at any point a member would suggest that there is a quid pro quo or anything of the such, you are dangerously close to coming up to an ethical boundary. I think you should advise your members to take a moment to reflect on where they're headed. This is highly inappropriate and unprofessional. Mr. Chair, we have been involved in discussion over multiple sessions, over multiple years, where all stakeholders have been present and engaged. And I'll tell you what, Representative Gomez, if you want to pull my campaign finance report, pull it. You're not going to find
I didn't say anything okay, about your campaign finance.
I will not.
Zerwas, please work through the chair. I am going to make comments about that.
I will not
allow you some latitude.
I will not allow that type of conduct to occur in this committee. It is wholly uncalled for, unprofessional. It is beneath this body. And I expect you, Mr. Chair, to hold your members accountable.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Representative Gomez, please keep the discussion not to the issue of things like campaign contributions, please.
Okay, can I just say, though, that, like, I mean, you just interrupted me, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I think that talking about the influence, talking about the fact that very powerful interests are opposed to seeing us levy fees against manufacturers and distributors of opioid medications that have been intentionally mismarketed to medical professionals and to the public is not out of order when we're having a conversation about whether we're going to fund this initiative that I think we all agree we need to do, right? Like, whether we're going to fund that through a fee levied against manufacturers and distributors, or we're going to funded out of the general fund. I don't think it's inappropriate to talk about the influence of the pharmaceutical industry in our political system. Like, that's what we're facing. That's what we faced last year. That's like why we're talking about this year instead of having passed the bipartisan legislation that was before the legislature last year. So
okay. Thank you, Representative
Mr.
Gomez.
Yes. Just to remind everyone, that bill was passed and vetoed.
Thank you.
Just to remind everyone.
Okay, thank you for the reminder, Representative Zerwas. Representative Vogel is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to enter into this, but my brother passed away a year and a half ago, and I come to be aware that opioids was part of that problem. So I take this very seriously because it's touched my family. I don't think, though, it's appropriate if I'm studying this issue, because I also have some serious reservations relative to the financial aspects of this, that I would not be inclined to look at it because of the financial aspects, because I do think this thing, if we're going to start it, needs to be sustainable, and it needs to have an outcome that is favorable. And if we don't look at this stuff carefully enough, we enter into things that we cannot afford or are not able to be completed. So I would hope that as we debate this stuff that it doesn't get personal, because quite honestly it is personal with me, and I'll take that into consideration. But I also have to recognize that I'm here representing the taxpayers and the people that are going to have to fund this thing, and I really think we have to come to a long-term, good, sustainable thing. And the thought of if indeed the usage drops and the per use fee goes up, these are things that I think that we really have to take into serious consideration. So I would just ask, as we talk about this, that we respect that there are some serious issues that I think yet have to be addressed as far as the operations of this, so that indeed we do accomplish what the authors, which I believe should be done, can be done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to also remind the folks that I don't believe Purdue is even going to be a part of who pays. I don't believe that will even happen. And to me, that is a big problem, because I believe they were the ones that misrepresented it to prescribers what was going to happen. And with that being said, in Commerce Committee last week, we saw a woman who quite frankly said that without having opioids, because she has several different diseases, she would not be able to get up, she would not be able to dress, she would not be able to walk down the steps to come and testify, because she is, I don't know how you take opioids responsibly, but she is, because of her pain. And we will see that over and over again, that there are folks that are going to have procedures, and to help manage their pain, we're still going to be using opioids. And we need to make sure that we don't price it so that they can't even have that option anymore. The woman who was testifying said that she had a couple diseases that were, she called them suicide diseases, where the pain is so great, people will take their lives because the pain is so great. So I think that's part of what we feel too, is in order to do good legislation, we have to make sure that we also take care of the folks who do responsibly use opioids for their pain management. And that's the reason why a lot of these bills take a long time to vet through, because there's so many different components of them. I'm very, very hopeful that this will be the year that we will get something done and we will start to remedy it. And that is why I'm so grateful that we have the opportunity to hear the bill several times. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we a finance committee?
No, I thank you for the question, Representative Nelson, which I think is rhetorical. I've allowed some latitude on a couple aspects here, but we are not a finance committee.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
We are here discussing the creation of the board, or the creation of a task force, or is it a commission, whatever you want to call it, and the rulemaking around creating that. Am I not correct?
That is correct. I've also allowed some discussion of the Board of Pharmacy and its expanded role, given the points raised by Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, because I've been hearing a lot of finance stuff and other stuff that I don't think has to deal with creating a writing of rules and creating a commission.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there any additional member questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, I will renew my motion.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Who's talking? Oh, I'm sorry. That's closing remarks.
Thank
yes.
you.
Representative Baker and Representative Olson.
I think, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for this. This has been through a number of stops, and it's not done yet. The bill gets better each time we hear your comments. I also want to take a moment to say to Representative Zerwas, he's right on a lot of issues that he's trying to bring up, and we're trying to find that right pathway. We don't know what this is going to look like in 5 and 10 years. And Representative Olson and I are talking about what do we do then. We haven't figured that out yet. But we also know that this is, as I said very early on, we don't want to hurt access. We don't want to think that this is actually going to be passed on because of the profits that have been made by these companies. It would be shameful if they did that, in my opinion. But I also want to make sure that, again, it's all part of what we have to do here, and it's new legislation that is not vetted anywhere else. So this is not supposed to be easy, and it's personal to a lot of us. But I also want to say general fund has been mentioned a lot. We are going to need general fund this year. If this passed today, it's going to take us a year or more to get the first nickel in the bank. So we're going to have your support right now this year for another $20 million or more to get these programs and community grants going right away. So I want to say that that's coming in too. But we have to do this. We have to get this right. Representative Zerwas said this. We have to get this right. But members, we have to do it now. This is the year to do it. And let's make sure we go through as many hoops as we have to get it right, because we don't want to have anything that wasn't foreseen and vetted out. So thank you for those great comments on both sides, and help us write this better bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Because we didn't get a chance to actually talk about why we're here, I do want to actually just highlight one of the parts about this bill that is really, so not just that we spent a lot of time on the revenue mechanism, but what's really great about this bill is the stakeholder engagement. I'm going to pass out a sheet that I forgot to do later, and I'll just do this now if there's a page, that talks about the groups that are supportive of this legislation. I think you see that reflected in the advisory council that this bill is going to create, which is going to ask for people that are impacted by this issue, because this issue hits every corner of the state. It hits every demographic group. It hits everybody from every background. And so this advisory council that is going to advise DHS has a big task ahead of them. But I think what I'm proud of the work that's been done to create that. I'm proud of the work that we're going to do on that. And I'm proud of all the folks who have come to the table and genuinely helped to find a solution, because it's going to take all of us coming here to the table with a genuine work to get this done. And so I'm proud to be at this stop and talking about the stakeholder group that's going to be able to make decisions on how we spend this revenue moving forward. And with that, I ask your support of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Olson. I will renew my motion that House File 400, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Your bill is continuing on its way. Thank you both, Representative Olson and Representative Baker, for being here. Mm-hmm. I just want to draw your attention. There are five bills on the agenda for Thursday, House Files 608, 619, 873, 826, and 562. The agenda for next Tuesday should be posted shortly as well. So I look forward to seeing everyone at our next meeting. This meeting is adjourned.